Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find over 4 separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, links for you to subscribe to the podcast, and a place where you can donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Charlotte.
Hi, I'm Charlotte. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. I'm glad to be here. I want to thank Atusa for asking me. Whew, I'm nervous, but I just have to tell myself to get over myself. And, you know, ask God to speak through me. So, anyways, I want to welcome the newcomer and, you know, just encourage you to keep coming back. You know, I had to for a couple years before it, I heard the solution and started taking action. So, also, my abstinence date is 4/9/2012. I have a sponsor, and my bottom line is no purging in any form, laxatives, colonics, throwing up, anything. So, those are the statistics, I think. So, anyways, I'll get to it. What I was like. So I was born on the East Coast, but my family moved pretty quickly to California. They were bankers and got jobs in San Francisco. And, you know, a lot of my early childhood memories were I was afraid. My dad was an alcoholic. And, you know, I just remember being really afraid. I had night terrors, and my family sent me to the psychiatrist when I was really young, when I was 3. And it was fun going to the psychiatrist when I was 3. I played in the sandbox, and, you know, my parents were really concerned about me because they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. But, you know, looking back, I think I was born with this ism, and you know, as I started growing up, my parents got divorced when I was 3, and I went to go live with my mom, and my dad really wasn't a part of my life for all of my life. Growing up, he moved out of state, and it was just my mom and myself, and I started to control my environment, and food I started to control what I ate, and I was a really picky eater right from the start. Like, I would eat 2 things, pasta with butter on it and pizza with nothing. Like, I would take everything off of it and just eat the bread. And my parents, you know, just didn't have a lot of tools, and they sort of just made fun of me for that. And of course, I got a resentment really early on. But you know, I was the perfect girl, the perfect little girl. I got really good grades and cleaned my room and only ate those 2 things for when I was a child. But as I grew up, my dad moved out of state, and I moved up to Napa Valley with my mom, and I had an idyllic childhood on the outside. Like, we lived in the country, I rode a horse, I went to public school until I was in 5th grade, and but I always, like, just felt like there was something a little bit off about me. And I started having, like, body obsession, and, like I said, I concerned with what I ate, and it was a lot of learned behavior, I think, in terms of, like, my family originates from the South, and I always used to hear my mom saying, like, oh, don't eat that, or you shouldn't eat that, or I'm fat, and I learned those things, and that definitely doesn't make me have the disease that I have, but I remember hearing a lot of that, and, you know, my mom was always on a diet, and so as I grew up, when I was about 11, I started to eat really just not very much, and my mom started to compliment me on losing a lot of weight, and I started reading all of these magazines, like, I don't know, 17, they're still around, and just sort of, like, compare and contrast my life, and I got the idea that being thin is happiness. And I'm like, if I am thin, I will be happy. And I think a lot of us in here, like, equate thin with happy. And so I, like, that became my goal. And it wasn't like I was going to go to college and become, you know, some, like, astrophysicist or something. It was like, I am going to be thin. And And like this lack, this sense of this lack inside of me or not enoughness, I equated like the way that I would become enough is by being thin and being prettier. And so I don't know how that came along, but like I said, I got a lot of positive feedback from my family members and also from guys that like if I looked good, things were all right. And other things like I don't know where I got that, but anyways, that was my goal. And so my life moved along, and I went away to boarding school on the East Coast, sort of, not because I was a bad kid. A lot of people think that, oh, were you bad? No, not at all. It was a family tradition, and I went away, and I was incredibly homesick, and I discovered bulimia there, and it wasn't unmanageable. Yeah, it was unmanageable. Unmanageable. It was the sort of bulimia that was like I would eat a normal meal and throw it up, and that's not what it looked like at the end. But I was not happy there. But I excelled, and that was sort of like another drug for me. Everything out on the outside, if I made straight A's, I was president of my class, everything was like a really pretty package. But on the inside, I was just, I was spiritually bankrupt, even at 16. And I had this eating disorder that was growing, and I did things like throw up in garbage bags in my, dorm room and hide them. And, I just denied that I had this eating disorder to everyone around me. And I went home, and at the same time, had always been my mom and I growing up together, and she got married 6 months before, 3 months before I went away to boarding school and had a baby. And I just experienced this deep rejection, and I used that to fuel my eating disorder and a lot of other isms that I, a lot of other addictions. So I left boarding school at 16 and went back to California to go to school because I thought that it was boarding school. And all my problems went from the East Coast to the West Coast with me. And, actually my eating disorder got way worse. It wasn't just eating a normal meal and then throwing it up. It became binging and then throwing up. So I would eat start to binge, and then the release that I got from the throwing up was something that I sought. And I started to abuse laxatives because I wasn't living in I wasn't living in a dorm anymore, so I didn't have to hide it. I was living at my dad's house, and it was a big house, and I remember going to school and coming home, and no one would be home, and I would binge, and I would throw up, and I would do my homework. I wouldn't see anyone until dinner, and then I would do it all over again. And I was taking mass amounts of laxatives, and it was just a pitiful, and my life was so small, and my only friend was also a bulimic, and we would do this together, and it was like my world was tiny, and like I said, I couldn't see a week ahead of me. It was just like this tiny existence, and I had no hopes or aspirations, even though I had so many capabilities. I was smart. I had everything going for me, but I just couldn't see out in front of me. I couldn't see the truth in my life. And so at the same time, I started to develop a drug addiction as well, and I went into treatment, and that sort of started a whole nother, which is an outside issue from this program, just years of being in and out of treatment centers for that. And, how that influenced my eating disorder is that I thought that that was the cure for my eating disorder. And, but it just put it on hold. And this disease was waiting for me every time that I, I would start using, and my eating disorder, like, I thought it was over, like, it was done, it was a miracle, but this disease was just doing push-ups and waiting for me, and it would come back with a vengeance, because I just couldn't stand the way that I felt, sober, and And so fast forward, you know, I spent from age 17 to 23 in and out of rehabs and, you know, sneaking any way that I could, you know, just get out of myself with my eating disorder. And it was just a really pathetic life. And what happened for me is I moved to Los Angeles in April 2007 and I got sober, and I knew that, like, it was like a monkey on my back, this eating disorder. I know that that's a description for something else, but it was my first addiction, and I had to deal with it. But I, you know what? That's not really the truth, because I went into a sober living, and I was able to it arrested it. It just sort of stopped. And I was able to control my food, and it was sort of like the boarding school experience, is that I wasn't able to really participate in it because I was living in an environment with a lot of other girls, and if I was going to throw up, I would have gotten kicked out. And so I just sort of, like, dealt, and I was afraid, and I didn't throw up, and... So what happened is I moved out on my own into an apartment in Venice, and my eating disorder came back, and I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop eating, and I couldn't stop throwing up, and my life was so small. Like, I slept all weekend, I ate, and I threw up, and I couldn't stop. And I came into, I dragged myself into the Hill Street meeting, and actually a member of this group here, I'd never been to OA, I'd never heard of it, and somebody said, you should try an OA meeting, and I said, I was willing. And I came into the Hill Street meeting, and I met a lot of you people there, and, you know, my top weight was 157 pounds, and I was just out of answers, and, you know, I was sober, but I was living a double life, and so I got a sponsor, and I stopped throwing up, but I wasn't able to stop the colonics, and I was doing, natural laxatives, and I wasn't willing to give everything up. I was doing it my way, but I was lying about it. And there was a member of this program, and I'm not sure if she's here, but she has sort of a similar story, that she was holding on to the laxatives, and I remember hearing her and just hating her because she was telling my truth. You know, I was claiming abstinence and working with a sponsor that just was so harsh, but she was willing to tell me the truth. I mean, she would tell me things like, your life is really pathetic and really small, and she was really right. And I thank her from the bottom of my heart, because, like, you know, I dare you get a sponsor that will tell you the truth. What happened for me? So that was January 2012. She sponsored me for 2011 into 2012, and, you know, the weight started to come off because I was doing colonics, but that didn't help, because I was still binging a lot, but I had stopped throwing up, and I was starting to work the steps and working with a sponsor and going to meetings on a regular basis. And then I met him, and oh my gosh, you guys, he was amazing. And I, like, sucked the life out of this guy. It's so bad. I put so much pressure on this relationship because I thought he was the one. Like, if I want something, I am going to get it. And, you know, I scared him off, and I was devastated, but it brought me to a new surrender, and I was in the, I was devastated, and I threw up. I lost the faux abstinence, and and I was at the cottage, and I was sobbing, and I got off, and my current sponsor was there, and she, you know, she just comforted me in a way that was really authentic and really got through to me. I really needed somebody to just be there, and she was, and I was able to get honest. She said, you know, are you abstinent, or, you know, and I said no, and I've been lying, and I just knew. What happened is, I realized that I was just lying to myself, you know, and that's what we do here. Is just totally, there's a smoke screen. I just was lying to myself, and who was I kidding? Just me. And I told her about the colonics, and not to mention the hundreds of that, like thousands of dollars that I was wasting. And she said, "Can you just not do that for the rest of today?" And I paused, and because I really didn't know, you know, it was like it's my lifeline. I had really no serious connection to God or reliance on God, because I was relying on these laxatives, like it was like God. And I said, "Okay, yeah, I can just not do it for today." And that was April 9th. And you know, I haven't. My plumbing is fine. Everything's fine. It's like, you know, I was just so worried that I was not going to be okay. And everything's fine. And for the years and decades that I abused my body, you know, thank God that it's fine. And it's not perfect, like the way that I'd like it to be, but meetings help. And anyways, so I started working with her, and you know, what started to happen is she advised me and suggested that my bottom line just be not purging. And I took her direction, and you know, like a lot of us, I eat for the effect, and I was binging on a weekly basis, and what I was directed to do was to build my life up, make calls, make girlfriends, get involved in school and in my other programs, and make a life for myself, because my life had gotten really small, and again had gotten really small and focused on this guy. And subsequently what's happened over the last 2 years is that my life has become important to me. I want to be in the middle of my life, and I don't want to binge. And so the binging has just slowly taken care of itself. And I just, I'm always looking for the quick fix. So I wanted the binging to be taken away. I wanted it to be perfect. I wanted to lose another 10 pounds. And that's not the way that it worked for me. Because as soon as I put a restriction on my food, like I eat too little, I'm binging in the next three days or a week. And you could have told me that, but I have to have the experience in my life to really have to get it, because I'm really hard-headed. I started going back to school, and lo and behold, I am a really good student. I'm really ambitious, and I, you know, I want a big life for myself. So I've done that. I've been at Santa Monica College, and I'm getting ready to transfer. And you know, I have today a big life that is awesome, and it's not small. And I have a lot of brain energy that is not focused on, you know, what do I look like. It's, I'm not busy being self-obsessed or any of that. So it's amazing how much time and space and energy I have to direct towards other people and you know, important. Just being involved in life. So I am able to sponsor people today, which is like just one of the biggest gifts of you know, just me getting out of self, which is something that I didn't think that I knew that I wanted when I first came into this program. I just wanted to be thin, and I wanted to be a little bit more sane. So that's one of the gifts that comes along down the road. And, you know, I am a sleeper. I like to sleep. And getting calls from sponsees has saved my butt and gotten me up and into my day. And it's just like a built-in, it's just a built-in alarm clock, and it's great. So, ways that I work my program today are, and like take care of myself, self-care that keeps me abstinent are, like, I drink enough water, I eat 3 meals a day, I go to a lot of meetings every week, I call my sponsor every day, I've worked all 12 steps, I talk to my sponsees on a daily basis, and I exercise daily, I try to pray and meditate every day, I'm not perfect, and I try to structure my day so that, you know, I don't have time to nap, and I try not to do things that just, and I try to eat things that don't, you know, that sustain me and don't, you know, that don't check me out. So I think that's, where am I? 20 minutes. Well, I'm probably going to have to open it up to questions, but yeah, I think that that is probably about all that I have to share. I'm glad to be here, and I'll open it up to questions. Thank you. The question was, can I talk about my spiritual practice and my relationship to God? So somebody asked me this last night. My relationship to God, I don't understand God, and I don't even try to understand God. And I've read a couple books that are not really approved literature, but I find really helpful. Like Emmett Fox is incredibly helpful and been really enlightening to me. But before I wake up, or when I wake up, before I check my email or anything, I try to connect with my body and just feel quiet, and just do maybe it's a second or 2 seconds. It just just connect, I guess is what you would say. And then I do the same thing at night, and I say thank you for the day. And I also read like I have 3 or 4 daily readers, and I try to get those in sometime during the day. I also you know, like in movement, like in exercise, I think that that is a connection with a God. And then also just listening to other people, like practicing listening is, God is just so, it's everywhere. And I think practicing listening skills is a way to connect. So I think that, I hope that answers your question. Okay, so the question is, what was I most afraid of when I was at the threshold of basically my surrender, and what has surprised me the most in that surrender, or since I've been abstinent? What I was most afraid of, I think, was giving up control and doing it differently, and the unknown. Like, I knew what taking laxatives and, on the threshold and getting a colonic was. And, of course, I was afraid of gaining weight. But I was also afraid of, you know, of what the dishonesty, that threat of dishonesty, where that would take me, like how that would affect and be sort of a snowball effect into the rest of my life. It was a poor foundation, and how else would that, you know, where else would the cracks show? I needed to build a solid foundation, and that lie was, could be deadly. And in that moment, I saw that, I felt it, okay, so that's part one. The second part, what has surprised me the most is, you know, that once I made that surrender, it really, like, I have so much more to gain. Like, my focus was so small, and, like, there's so much, the world has so much to offer me, and, I think that I'm just surprised at how big my life has gotten, and, you know, the relationships that I've been able to make, because I've been able to be selfless in terms of sponsorship and other relationships, I think has surprised me, because I really just had no idea. Like, I was just so focused on myself, and, I mean, how could I have known? So, that surprised me. The first question is, how do I balance two programs? So sobriety is my primary. So I go to more AA meetings or whatever AA than I do OA, but I always go to at least one OA meeting a week. If I can do more, I do. And I have a sponsor that's in AA and an OA, so one sponsor for each, and that's not necessary, but it's worked for me. I've worked the steps in both, so that was helpful to get into the nitty gritty of my eating disorder. How do I balance? I just do. I mean, I just have to. You know, it's just sort of, I don't question it. It's a must. And what was the second question? They look really different all the time, but I always try to have a protein and a green and a fruit, or at least a fruit, and a... I don't eat gluten because it makes me sick. You know, that this has been an area that's not been clean for me. It's hard for me to answer what does a typical meal look like for me, really. I try to always eat a protein and a vegetable or a fruit, and how did I make my life larger? Or was that your question?
Yeah, like what did I do?
First of all, I had to make friends. And, you know, it's like I'm a loner, an isolator. I'd rather do it alone. And, you know, 99% of the time, I have better time when I'm with other people. And actually someone, my first sponsor, told me that making friends is like dating, you know? And it's true. It takes effort. And honestly, I'd rather not put the effort in, but the the long term, like, I'm a human and humans need interaction. Human interaction to survive. And outside of meetings, too. I mean, I can hide in a meeting. And so I still have to work at this and make dates to meet with women and work at it. So that was one area. I went back to school, and it's taken a lot of trial and error, or, you know, knowing what I wanted to do, and upping the bar. You know, it's sort of, I heard this in a meeting that I go for the bronze, and it's sort of like I settle for third best, because my pride is like, oh, I don't want to look bad, but that is just not what my life is about, you know, or what I want my life to look like. It may be the easier way, but you know, so this year has been about going for the gold and what I really want and what I've always wanted. and that means taking the full load at school, applying to the hardest schools, asking for a lot of help. So that, and then dating, and I've dated and have been in relationships, and you know, that's been a whole nother area, and it's been good and it's been painful, but it's all been about, you know, growing and rejoining the human race. And what else? And just trying to have fun, you know. I can be a really serious person, and just inviting fun into my life. So I think that's how I've done it. And just keeping program first. So, sure. What was my experience with a 4-step, and how did I know when I was done? How did it have a positive impact or impact on my recovery?
Yeah, if it did.
Okay, so I've done a few 4-steps, and I knew when I was done because I couldn't think of anybody else. And I was told not to dig, and that this is a program that I'll always be in, hopefully. And it's a, you know, this is a lifestyle, and I'll have the opportunity to do another 4-step. And, you know, perfection is a character defect, so I have to watch out for that. And, you know, that there's a pattern in my 4-step, and I'm sure that if I've written down 10 or 20 or 30 people, that the pattern will be in there, and that it's in there. And I've had two experiences. I've had the amazing, oh my gosh, euphoric, you know, I feel things in my body, so I somaticize things. I was, you know, keeled over in my stomach. I mean, keeled over, my stomach hurt, bloated, like that sort of, oh my gosh, experienced my 4-step, and, like, on a pink cloud for a couple weeks, and then I've also had the experience, like, really? That's it? So, but they've always, I mean, they've been really instrumental in, rejoining me and bringing humility and right-sizing me. You know, they're instrumental in the rest of the steps, so I've always been encouraged to just do them. So that answers your question. The question was, can I describe my experience, strength, and hope of making amends. So, my most profound amends has been with a boyfriend of mine I had a boyfriend that died of a drug overdose, and he and I made a financial contribution to his, I guess, what would it be called? Charity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I didn't think anything of it, and it wasn't even a lot of money. It was just, you know, something that I thought would close the loop, because it was a really ugly, you know, it was not a pretty thing that happened. And, you know, I got this letter out of the blue from his mom, and this happened like over 10 years ago, and it was just the most beautiful letter, you know, thanking me for and recognizing the relationship that we had, and you know, just wishing me well. And we have a relationship today, and so I, you know, that's sort of like my favorite amends story. And that he, you know, she's a deeply spiritual, religious woman that lives in Texas, and it just closed that loop for me, because I always felt that I had abandoned him, or that I had not done enough. And her reaching out and writing that letter just so healed that relationship for me. But, you know, all of my amends have been positive. I haven't had an experience that, you know, someone told me they didn't want to talk to me, or they didn't, and nothing like that. And people have always been really encouraging of my journey. You know, I have 5 amends left, and the easiest ones have been financial amends. But the hardest ones have been ones within my family, I think. My experience is that I just have to do them, and I'm giving that my own advice. You know, so there's just a sense of peace and rightness with the world that I get from doing them. So it's scary, but it just takes a little like pulling up your bootstraps and just moving forward, moving through the fear. So that's it. Thanks.
So what's a thought or something that you do when maybe you don't have tools handy, you feel overwhelming emotion?
Yeah, I have a pretty open dialogue with God, so I just ask God to be with me and to bring comfort to me. And it seems to either distract me or work. So I'm not really sure which one. That's it. Okay, I think I'll end. Thank you.